I was able at last to persuade my companion to take my advice, though I knew from his excited manner that there was not much hope of sleep for him. Indeed, his mood was infectious, for I lay tossing half the night myself, brooding over this strange problem, and inventing 100 theories, each of which was more impossible than the last. Why had Holmes remained at Woking? Why had he asked Miss Harrison to remain in the sick room all day? Why had he been so careful not to inform the people at Briar Bray that he intended to remain near them? I cudgelled my brains until I fell asleep in the endeavour to find some explanation which would cover all these facts. It was 7 o'clock when I awoke, and I set off at once for Phelps's room to find him haggard and spent after a sleepless night. His first question was whether Holmes had arrived yet. "He'll be here when he promised," said I, "and not an instant sooner or later." And my words were true, for shortly after 8 a hansom dashed up to the door, and our friend got out of it. Standing in the window, we saw that his left hand was swathed in a bandage, and that his face was very grim and pale. He entered the house, but it was some little time before he came upstairs. "He looks like a beaten man," cried Phelps. I was forced to confess that he was right. "After all," said I, "the clue of the matter lies probably here in town." "Phelps, I have noticed that when he is off the trail, he generally says so. It is when he is on a scent, and is not quite absolutely sure yet that it is the right one, that he is most taciturn. Now, my dear fellow, we can't help matters by making ourselves nervous about them. So let me implore you to go to bed, and so be fresh for whatever may await us tomorrow."